Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily podcast. Theresa May has made the last roll of her Brexit dice, laying out the conditions for a fourth vote on her Brexit deal, this time with lots of sweeteners aimed at the Labour Party. But are there going to be many takers? The deal has only been around for less than an hour, and it looks as if it has fallen flat. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls to discuss. So, Katie, what are the details of this new, improved Theresa May offer, and why does nobody seem to be interested?
So Theresa May has taken the tact of rather than choosing one group to pitch this new deal, if we call it new in inverted commas for the time being, she has thrown the kitchen sink at it. And that means you have lots of different concessions or changes to the deal which are all aimed at different groups. Now, I'd say the most notable one, or the one that's caused the most surprise today, is that of a second referendum. And Theresa May has said that she will commit to allowing a vote on a second referendum in the second reading. And that suggests that were MPs to vote for a second referendum, the government would then provide government time to legislate for that. Now, that has gone further than some of Theresa May's cabinet colleagues had wanted. Mm. However, it's worth noting that as things stand, we still don't think there are the numbers in the House of Commons for a second referendum. So it could be a slightly meaningless gesture. From Theresa May's point of view, what she's trying to do is to tempt those Labour votes, those Labour MPs who are looking for a confirmatory referendum, as they like to call it, into backing her deal. You also have some things that we've heard about before that have been touted, so workers' rights, environmental protections, and there's looking to the DUP, a Stormont lock, the idea that it's going to be harder for, or it's going to be very hard for Northern Ireland to diverge, or in fact the Great Britain to diverge from Northern Ireland, and that's aimed at trying to win the DUP over. For the Brexiteers, we have a promise of this plan to work on alternative solutions to fixing the border problem. There's more where it comes from, but I don't want people to switch off. I think in general the effect is you have a situation where she's trying to appeal to lots of groups, but say for example the alternatives to the Irish border might appeal to a few Brexiteers. What doesn't appeal to them is lots of things she's offered to Labour, such as, you know, a vote on Parliament on the next stages of the negotiations or the way you go, because they see that as moving to a softer Brexit. So I don't think she is going to get the effect that she wants from this.
There's essentially something for everybody, but not enough for anyone. And that is the problem of what she's doing. She's trying to aim little things at, as Katie was saying, little things at each group in Parliament. But the problem is when you put them in the round, they contradict each other. So the things that might appeal to one set of MPs alienates another. And if you look at the initial reaction to this speech, it appears to have lost a lot more Tory MPs than voted against the deal the last time round, without winning over any substantial chunk of Labour MPs. I asked one cabinet minister after today's meeting what the point in this vote was, given that it looks like they're going to lose, and their view was, no one thinks there's a point. This has all been driven by number 10.
Because even they must have a point.
Well, I think they have a point, which is, if you're Theresa May, why not have this one last go at trying to get this thing through? But I am beginning to have, and I'll say more on this in the magazine coming out on Thursday, I'm beginning to have real doubts over whether this second reading vote will ever take place. Because if Theresa May tries and fails, it will make things so much harder for her successor. I just am beginning to wonder if there won't be some kind of intervention stage to say, after the European elections, if it doesn't look like this thing has any chance of success, just don't do this. Now is the time to step aside.
So, James, it will make it harder for her successor, because if she holds this vote, it will be, for procedural reasons, difficult to hold another vote on it.
You couldn't have another second reading of a withdrawal agreement bill without a new session of Parliament. That requires a new Queen's speech. That requires a renewal of the Tory DUP deal. So I think, remember how the first meaningful vote was pulled, because it was just heading for a massive defeat and everyone was like, what is the point? I think we could be in similar territory again, because it is hard not to feel sympathy for Mrs. May. She is offering lots of people something. But everyone is just going to turn around and still say, well, it's not everything, so I'm not going to take it. And this is her problem. But I don't see today from the reaction that this is working. You've got Tory MPs who voted for the deal last time round. Now, coming out, you know, I think we've already had 10 more Tory MPs.
What, David Davis?
David Davis, Simon Clarke, who's a big Boris Johnson backer, and I think that's an indication of which way he's going. Amory Trevelyan, Ian Duncan Smith. We could go on of people who are saying now that they, Charlie Elphick, people who are saying that they voted for it last time around, but they won't vote for it. And the worry for number 10 is you haven't got any opposite reaction on the Labour side. You haven't got Labour MPs coming out saying, oh, well, actually, I want to look at this. Now, some people say, well, there's an election on Thursday. They're not going to come out before then. But I don't sense from anywhere that there's a big block of cavalry about to ride to Theresa May's rescue.
Katie, there seems to be even less logic to this now than there was this morning. The best Theresa May can hope for here is to say, OK, my Brexit plan failed, it's been voted out, but at least I did it my way.
Yes, she could say that. I think there is still a hope in 10 Downing Street that when the European election results come in on Sunday, they are going to be so bad for both the Conservatives and, crucially, Labour, that it could change. It could be that sea change moment.
God, there's always something around the corner. So what she's thinking is they're going to wake up on a Monday morning, because we're not getting the results until Sunday, thinking, oh, look at these results, they're so bad, and we'll just have to vote through a deal now.
Yes, exactly. I think probably hope that is draining fast, given that in the 30 minutes since we've had that speech come out, you've seen such a harsh response that I think it's very hard to get that back. And there was always a baseline assumption that Theresa May, by trying to pivot to Labour votes, would lose some Tory MPs. But I thought they would probably have around 160 Tory MPs vote for the deal, and then you would need probably 160 Labour MPs. Now, as things stand, I'm not sure she has 160 Tory MPs. She could still do, but that has to be confirmed. And that means she needs that many Labour votes. And the problem is the Labour Party is still very split in trying to work out if they should be heading to a second referendum and proud pitch, or if they should be moving towards something which respects or appeals to those voters, their Leave voters in other areas. And I think that means that it's not clear enough one way to get that level of Labour support.
Now, James, that's quite an interesting point, that Labour is in more of a dilemma over what it should do on Brexit. I imagine the second referendum gambit, probably the biggest oddball she had to throw in today's list of bribes, was intended to make Jeremy Corbyn think, OK, look, this might get me out of trouble. Because for the first time, his strategy of strategic ambivalence in Brexit is beginning to fail. He's beginning to lose voters to the Lib Dems. Remainers are going to go to the polls on Thursday thinking, what's the point in voting for the Labour Party? So it seems that he is moving or being dragged further down the Remain road, but in doing so, losing more of his Brexit voters.
Yeah, I think that Labour brilliantly straddled these two positions in the 2017 election. It's becoming more and more difficult for them to do that. And I think one of the other complications is, so I think there'll be a big boost for Labour supporters of a second referendum from these European election results, because people will say, ah, yes, the Brexit Party won, but look at the fact that Lib Dems did much better than they've done in any election since they went into coalition in this contest. Look at how well the Greens did. That shows that if we had been as loud and proud for a second referendum as the Brexit Party are for WTO Brexit, we'd have matched them and we could have beaten them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, Jeremy Corbyn's office know, and this came out very clearly, I'm told, in the conversations that the Labour and the Tories had, that basically in September, Labour conference will impose on them a second referendum as party policy, despite Jeremy Corbyn's own misgivings about it. But I think the thing you've seen with Jeremy Corbyn is he's always tacked enough towards that second referendum position to avoid the full-on breach of his Remain base. You know, it is no coincidence that on Andrew Marr on Sunday, he seemed to suggest that he now backed a second referendum on any deal. While as previously, he'd only backed a second referendum on a bad Tory Brexit, or to prevent no deal.
So he's being stretched further and further in that direction. But something tells me that he's never going to go as far as the majority of his MPs, the second referendum Remain camp, want.
Yes, but I think it's going to be, I think by Labour conference, it will be impossible for him to resist the demands for a second referendum. Okay. I don't think that means he's going to get a second referendum, because getting Labour support for a second referendum is a sufficient but not necessary condition for one taking place. But I think Labour's position by the time of the October EU Council will be that they favour a second referendum in all circumstances.
Now, Katie, you've written a piece which is going in the New Magazine where you go and talk to Brexit Party voters in Labour areas like Dudley, for example. What did you pick up on the doorstep in the streets then?
So I've been to two Brexit Party events, actually three technically, but the two main ones were one in Dudley, which is a Labour marginal, tiny majority.
But 67% leave.
67% leave, and Nigel Farage rode into town with his big blue Brexit bus. And I would say the crowd assembled committed, because it was raining, was roughly evenly split between people who would traditionally vote Tory and people who would traditionally vote Labour. And one Labour voter I spoke to basically made the point that she'd never not voted Labour in her life, but she voted Brexit and she felt like there was something wrong with the idea that she voted for something and the party didn't seem particularly interested in delivering it. And I think there was just a sense that what have these people in Westminster been doing for several years now when they've had this mandate, and that has created a disconnect. And then last night I was in Bolton, which is an area, again, which is fairly marginal, and it was, again, a real mix, and there are lots of former Labour voters there. There's definitely, I would say, Labour voters split into two. So there were some who had already gone from Labour to UKIP, who are now moving to the Brexit Party. But there's also Labour voters who voted Leave and since then do feel this distance. Generally, it just seems to be a lot of anger at these events. You do see the Brexit Party candidates obviously playing to that, because the main focus in all these speeches is betrayal.
Right. But the funny thing is, Katie, that you might imagine that if anybody looks at Nigel Farage, they would see a right-winger. Now, sure, he's only got one policy this time around, which is to vote for Brexit. But you might have thought a few years ago that just his general cut of his jib might put off left-wingers. But you saw a few of them who weren't put off by that.
Yeah, I think there was a sense that you might not agree with Nigel Farage's specific politics, but he...
Or you might not even like him as a person.
Yeah, but he... But there was a view that he cared about ordinary people. And I would say one interesting thing was, I was in Bolton last night and I was speaking to a few people who'd attended this rally, and one man I spoke to was a swing voter, and he was saying, I'm not sure about the Brexit Party yet, but I'm interested, he voted Leave, and also they actually come to areas where I live. A lot of these parties don't do events like this. Yeah. And I think there is a sense that Farage will go out into certain places that the Tories don't really have such a presence in. But you also had a point where Claire Fox, who is a libertarian writer, former Marxist, was speaking at this Brexit rally in Bolton last night, and she was quoting Tony Benn to a mixed crowd, and the Tony Benn quotes were getting a standing ovation. She was referring to the philosopher Locke, and it did seem to be something that was not, you couldn't tie it down or I think compare it in any way to what you might expect a UKIP event to have been like a couple of years ago.
Well, I have to say Tony Benn's speeches on Europe were pretty good. In fact, here's one he made back in 1975, the last referendum when only The Spectator and The Morning Star were supporting Brexit.
Are the British people, when they vote in a general election, to be able to change the policies of the government that has previously been there? And it is already a fact that whatever government is in power, our agricultural policy is now controlled from Brussels, our trade policy is controlled from Brussels, our industrial policy is controlled from Brussels. It is a democratic and not a nationalistic argument.
That was Tony Benn making the argument for what is now known as Lexit. James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store. Now, I would also normally ask you to rate and review us, but you can go one better. We've also got an email address now, podcast@spectator.co.uk. You can email us and we can reply. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you have any tips on the podcast, what you'd like to hear more or less of, whether you think this outro music game is just getting a bit tedious, whether you have any other thoughts on any of the other podcasts that we do. We would love to hear from you. So do drop us a line, podcast@spectator.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our producer, Cindy Yu.
it was mine.